The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime World Daily as the countdown kind of begins. The final week of not just the World Cup, but this show. Unless, of course, SiriusXM won a daily soccer show at 2 p.m. on Canada Talks.
Or a weekly. A weekly would be good, too.
Weekly would be fine, too. We're open to that as well. We're open to all sorts of conversations, SiriusXM. We're getting to the point now where our sponsorship deals are running low. We're desperate. And we've never been ones to tiptoe around the issues, have we? So, yeah, anyone out there that wants to throw money at us, we are more than open to that conversation. I'm James Sharman. There's Craig Forrest. There's Jimmy Brennan. There's Jeff Cole. There's Danielle Wongerton. Mm-hmm. No Amy Walsh today. Dumps has plumbing issues.
Sausage party. Assuming.
It is kind of, isn't it? Yes, it's not often that Dubs isn't on the show. But she might join us later on once she gets her plumbing issues sorted, which isn't a metaphor, she assures us. All right, we've got some controversies to talk about. Some scandals, perhaps. It was a weekend, a Saturday that really raised the bar for this World Cup, perhaps, as far as real angst. As if it wasn't already full of angst. There's more angst after England beat Norway. Argentina beat Switzerland to set up an England-Argentina semi-final on one side of the bracket. That's Wednesday, of course. We have France-Spain on the other side of the bracket. Two beautiful footballing teams, technical geniuses, and then you got England and Argentina with so much history, both on and off the pitch. Two teams that have found ways to get to this point in the World Cup despite being down in their matches. So much to get to here. Where shall we start? Shall we start with the England-Norway game? How about that? Right? That was the first game on Saturday. The Jude Show, Craig Forrest. Jude Bellingham, before we get to the controversies, he's emerged as one of the faces now of this World Cup. A true top performer when his team needs it. I can't remember an England player like this. Usually the top players let England down. They can't elevate themselves to their club form for the country. I'm thinking of Steven Gerrard. I'm thinking of Frank Lampard. You could go back over the years, right? But Jude Bellingham, he's almost overshadowing Harry Kane at this point. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. It is. Having those top performers obviously really important. He's been incredibly dynamic and efficient, getting in the right positions, scoring goals. Yeah, he's been a delight to watch, and certainly for England's point of view, that's exactly what they need at the right time.
Jimmy, what is he, Jude Bellingham? Is he a 10? Is he an 8? Is he a 6? he can do it all, really. He's playing more of a 10 right now for England, unless he's called upon to drop deep to start the half until Thomas Tuchel realizes he's made a mistake. But what, to you, is Jude Bellingham from a coaching standpoint?
I think he's just an all-round complete player. The guy can play anywhere. If you need him as a 10, an 8, a 6, he can do that job anywhere in the middle of the park. I think his football IQ is so high that it allows him to play those various positions in different formations. But he's a game changer. You can just see in his eyes he is up for this World Cup. And he wants to win it. He's got a winning mentality. We know that when we watch him at Real Madrid and the way that he plays and competes, he's only got one thing on his mind. And that's to win this World Cup. That's just the form that he's playing in right now. He's unstoppable and a joy to watch, to be fair.
And outspoken to a point, right? Certainly somewhat critical of what Tuchel said. I guess he was unhappy with their form and whatnot, but they played in two really tough matches, at altitude with Mexico and then the heat and even suggest that the manager wouldn't know what that feels like, which is actually a very good point, because he probably wouldn't know what it feels like. He never had much of a playing career.
Yeah.
But I love that, though, that he goes at his manager post-match. If you haven't seen it, you should look it up, because Thomas Tuchel's interview just as a game finishes, which is always a dangerous time to interview a manager. Ask John Herdman, ask Jesse Marshall about that. And Tuchel goes, bottom line is we did not play well. We can play much better than that. We have to be better than we played today. Mm. And then when Bellingham was informed of this during his post-match interview, I think in the mix zone, he goes, what? Yeah, well, I guess he doesn't know what it's like to play in such conditions. And it was, 35 degrees. They're coming off that Metsco match. I think as a coach, Jimmy, you don't mind that, do you? Because he wasn't...
No.
He didn't attack the coach. He just kind of reminded everyone, listen, it's very difficult to play at this level in those conditions.
I think as a manager, when a game's done and you really haven't had too much time to reflect and process the whole match, and they get you right away and your emotions are running high and you say things, we weren't that great. We could have played better. But, as a player, you look at it and go, yeah, we didn't play great, but we're a good team and we find a way to win, and we won. It's not always going to be pretty. You want to be in full control of the match for 90 plus minutes. You're not going to be able to do that at times. And Bellingham's more or less just saying, hey, I'm sorry it wasn't pretty, but we did what we're meant to do. This is knockout football, and we're meant to get the job done, and we did. And as a manager, if you hear that from a player, he'd probably step back, a few hours later and went, yeah, you know what, Jude, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I don't mind that from a manager either,
right.
Because he's right in a point, in a way too, that they need to be better. And you don't mind the manager pushing it that way as well. The mentality, the players aren't anti-Tuchel, they're just... wanting to compete and wanted to be better and wanted to win matches. Everybody wants that when you're in a squad. So that's kind of where they're at. There's no issues at all.
I was just thinking about what Jimmy was saying about Tuchel, right after the match. Sometimes it's a bit of a canned response, right? Whether the match was a great match or not a great match, I can imagine the emotions are super high. And he's just going to what he says all the time, right? Like, literally, you could use that, what he said in probably game when he coached Chelsea. When he, he could say that in any game. And he would still, everyone go, yeah, you're right. It wasn't the best, right? Like, he could say that against anything. Like, my sexual performance. Oh, not great. Doable.
Got the job done, though.
You're used to that.
Got it over the line.
Yep, finished up.
It wasn't pretty.
it was really not
found
pretty.
A way in the end.
That's
sometimes
right.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, it's a canned response. It's a canned response.
But it's refreshing, though. I forget who was talking about it. Is it maybe Carragher or I don't know. Anyway, they're saying it's so refreshing because in the past, England managers would have come at that match and said, I'm so proud of the boys. Should get resiliency. Good for them. We showed that English fighting spirit. It's like he said, no, none of that. He said, no, we can play better. We have to play better. They got a game against the world champions coming up. And if that goes right, then you're playing the top two, one of the top two teams in world football. You won't win that game playing that way. Simple as that. Forget the conditions and make all the excuses you want in the past about, oh, well, we're coming off a really emotional high, but a draining match here at the Azteca. Right, Craig? This is a coach saying, okay, we're in the World Cup semifinals right now. We have to improve our performance to move on. And that's okay.
Yeah, what is this? England's fourth semifinal since 2018? That's as many as they've ever had rated through their history. So they got to this point, and it's kind of their water mark, I guess, where they're trying to get beyond. And obviously, at this stage, you're talking about, the cream has risen to the top here with all these teams. Like, the talent is just incredible, and any team has got to feel that they can win it from this point. Don't you think, Jimmy?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, when you looked at it at the beginning of the World Cup and you said, okay, who's the favorites? And everybody was pretty much going, France is going to be up there, Spain, England's got a shot with the squad, Argentina, defending champs. So this four that are there are a lot of people's picks saying these are the best teams, best players in the world, and these are the ones that are going to get to the stage. And they didn't disappoint. I mean, some of their games were absolute grinds, and they had to figure a way to win. But it wasn't really easy for them at all, that's for sure.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
Sharms, did you like this game? Did you like this match?
No.
Watching it? Was it another?
You know, like, the answer to that. You saw my text.
I know, but I need to hear it. You know, we have a podcast, so there's a reason I'm asking it. Are your nails right? Are your nails?
People weren't on our WhatsApp group, were they?
When they were doing the
match, they don't know. No, I didn't enjoy it. Again, same as Mexico. I just don't enjoy England games. I don't. I'm so tense. And you know what? It's interesting. It's not like it used to be. I used to be quite miserable during these England games. The tension was really there. Over the last few years, it's dissipated somewhat, while my lack of enjoyment of Canada games has increased, which is a moment for me.
It is.
I think I'm more emotionally attached to Canada now, because as much as I didn't enjoy that match on the weekend or the Mexico match, I really didn't enjoy Switzerland. I really didn't enjoy South Africa. And I really didn't enjoy Morocco. Mm. So I think that's a moment for me. You know, it's nice. It's kind of switched now. We finally turned.
Yeah.
From my lack of enjoyment of England games is actually not as bad as my lack of enjoyment for Canada games.
Well, you know what you should do? You should go out and marry a girl from Red Deer, Alberta. And that will make you fully Canadian.
I should do that. Have a Canadian daughter.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's a hope that kills you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Buy a house near the nuclear power plant.
Nuclear.
And every day I wake up thinking, is this the day it blows? Is this going to be the day? Actually, we got in the mail this past week, we got our iodine tablets.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
In case there's a leak.
In a certain vicinity, and you get these in the mail every year. You get these, yeah. I think, is it iodine? I think it's iodine. And they send them to you just in case something goes awry. And they'll say, oh, God, take the pills now. I think they might be suicide pills.
Oh.
You know, they're thinking,
cyanide.
You're cyanide, yeah. Like, you don't want these. You don't want to go through this. Just take these.
I think, you know how I grew up by the hydro field? I think growing up by the nuclear facility might be a little more harsh that they're sending pills to you.
Well, we'll see when they in the autopsies of our bodies in a few years' time, we find who's got the most lesions.
Yes.
Yeah. Coming up on Footy Prime, the autopsy.
Brought to you by Tim's.
You know it's bad when you're walking in the kitchen and the forks are sticking to you.
if you sign up to our Patreon account, you can see this stuff.
Yeah.
That's the additional bonus content.
Well, sorry. I was going to say, for you guys, and there were controversies, and we're going to get to them because of the game, but did the controversies outweigh, if you have to put this game, like, hey, did the controversies outweigh the play on the pitch and the win and all that kind of stuff?
What controversies?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are you talking about? They weren't controversial.
The old spider cam?
The spider cam?
Spider-gate.
How come Jordan, Jordan Pickford, right?
Yeah.
How come he can talk with his mouth covered like this and no one else can?
Well,
did you remember that at the end of the match or close to the end of the match?
Yeah, but the Norwegian didn't freak out as if he said heard something terrible.
Yeah, but that's not the rule.
No, it is. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
If the Norwegian guy reacted and said, hey.
Yeah, but that's not the rule. And this is, I think, what everyone's getting upset about is before the knockout stage happened, and we even mentioned this last week, Sharms, we thought this, everything was going so swimmingly. VAR was a pleasant to watch. The new rules, and we've already talked about, we're going to grade the new rules and the new rules on the pitch and the new VAR rules. But we were like, oh, this is magnificent. We were skipping, holding hand, Sharms, in a lilac field about how great this was. We're literally having a skip. No controversies. And if there were controversies, at least they could be explained, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These are, I'm not saying unexplainable, but they leave you sitting there wondering, because once again, it's the team that you know that FIFA wants to win. Because look at the star final that we're having. It's the team that they want to win that is getting the calls. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, listen, and I'm happy to go through all these incidents, and we will, because we've got to fill another 45 minutes.
Yeah, good.
But the bottom line is, of course they want the big teams there, and I don't like it. Big teams getting the calls, but they've always got the calls. You name the sport.
Yeah.
You name the sport. Big teams, big players generally get those calls, generally speaking. In this particular occasion, so, I mean, the Pickford thing, I mean, what's silly about that is, with his Geordie accent, he doesn't need to cover his mouth because the Norwegian has no idea what he's saying. No clue. That's unnecessary. And does it count for a goalie? He's got gloves on. Is it the same? I don't know. You tell me. That wasn't the biggest controversy. It was Spider-Cam.
No, it wasn't.
Right?
It was.
We've got the Haaland push. We can talk about that. But the Spider-Cam, Craig, that's such a freaky kind of weird thing. I've watched it over and over again as well. Is it obvious?
Explain what the spider cam is first, though, Sharms.
Yeah, well, the spider cam is this amazing camera angle. It's a camera that sits above the field on these cables, and it gives you that incredible like north-south imagery of which is quite new. Probably a decade now, probably, but it's fantastic.
20 years, I think. The spider cam was actually, I want to say 2005, when the prototype came out.
Mm. Okay, 20 years, and how many times has a ball hit the cable in those 20 years?
Not many. There's more of a worry of it actually crashing down than there is being hit by the ball. They're pretty good. The operators know what to do, try to keep away. I mean, you got four cables coming from four corners of the stadium. I know the cable itself is, because I talked to the guy who was operating it, says the cable is like 3.2 millimeters in width. There's a whole bunch of, you know, fiber
millimeters. Cables. Millimeters, like
millimeters, and it can hold like 3,000 or 6,000 pounds of weight.
Wow,
for a camera that's only 220, 230 pounds, something like that, or less. It's quite extraordinary. German design that is how many times,
of course, this is the Germans,
right?
Yes, what was the operator? Was he by chance wearing a blue and red suit?
Spider cam,
yeah. German, if anything. He was definitely a German.
Was he? It's amazing. I mean, that'd be a fun job, though, wouldn't it? But, I mean, I'm sure it has happened. That was some hoof for the ball to hit the cable. But the little heartbeat of the ball, as they said, wasn't it? I think it was the heartbeat of the ball. Yeah. Which, if we're talking about a heartbeat of the ball, I think we've gone too far to start with. If a ball's got a heartbeat, I don't know what we're doing anymore. I just don't.
It's not really got a heartbeat, but it's not alive, Charles. It's like
clear.
Yeah.
Mama, give it both to both. Where's ow. Stop kicking me. You're a ball. That's your job. Doesn't mean I like my job.
Yeah.
But I mean,
they could actually tell in the heartbeat whether or not it hit a hair. For that goal, was a Croatia goal against Portugal.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't even tell, but apparently it hit his hair and you could see that there was a little heartbeat.
Yeah, that's right.
That. And yet they didn't show anything hitting, which looked as though it hit the cable, and it showed nothing.
But it's funny you brought that up, Craiger, because that's when Sharms and I think our whole hand-holding, skipping through the prairie locks that's when we started going, oh, there's something going on here with VAR, right? Like, it's noticing the hair on the guy's head getting touched. And I'm just going to read the IFAB laws of the game. Striking an overhead wire constitutes outside interference, meaning play should have been immediately ruled dead and restarted with a dropped ball.
Yeah.
So that's IFAB rules. Are once again, and this isn't a, we've seen VAR being used back to the future, like with, you know, with McFly. They're literally calling plays back and saying, hey, this changed what was going to happen on the pitch. I think what's difficult for people to understand is, why is that not being called back, or at least being reviewed, when everything else seems to be being reviewed and that wasn't? And I think it's the unequalness or the imbalance of going to VAR or using VAR or VAR stepping in, right? Like it,
this without VAR, you know, you wouldn't, it was so negligible. It wouldn't have been called. And we're not talking about this, but VAR has made it to the point where we have to analyze even the smallest moment. And if I'm a Norwegian, I'm furious. I understand why they're angry. 100%. It should have been, if it did touch, and pending this video evidence, I mean, I've watched it. Okay, I mean, I should probably watch it more on a full-size screen. It's difficult to really tell. But if it did, it should have been ruled dead. And England got a huge break.
Yeah, what a touch. It reminds me, remember when Liverpool were playing, I think it was at Sunderland or Middlesbrough or something?
The beach
remember
ball.
There was a ball on the field?
Yeah, the beach ball.
Beach ball and it hit the beach ball.
Yeah.
Went in and they allowed it. And it's like, no, it's
a
foreign object on the field is not supposed to count.
And that was a huge game as well, wasn't it? Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's I don't think these games are rigged. I really don't. And people
I'm not saying they're rigged, but is it, are we going to VAR too often? Is VAR intervening in the play of the game? We already have the hydration breaks where the actual announcer, when he said, he goes, and we've reached the third quarter. Like, he's now saying it. And I'm sure that's not what he's supposed to say, but they literally are now saying we've reached the third quarter mark. When the hydration.
No, you're absolutely not supposed to say that.
Yes.
You know that for a fact, Greg, you were told that?
Yes, it's the hydration break.
Oh. Not the third quarter.
No. No.
Did but you hear him say it too? I mean, did you? Yeah, but you did you hear him say it too? Because it stood out to me when he said it. But I don't know how you were watching the game.
Yeah, I thought I heard something like that.
Yeah, so, we've reached the third quarter mark.
It all depends on who the commentators are, too. But I think those were guys were host broadcasters, I think. But if Fox are doing their own games or TSN's doing their own games, they can sometimes.
Well, it's whoever was calling the match with Mark Schwarzer, because Mark was on.
Yeah, that'll be a host broadcast. Yeah, that's host broadcast. Yeah.
Yeah, so shout out to Mark, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It still goes a little bit too far, but I still think the World Cup's been remembered for the great games and the occasion. I hope.
Really?
That then these, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the incidents are kind of pushing a dark cloud over the performances on the pitch, but every World Cup has these.
It's true. Not that they do.
Anything new.
It
is.
Yeah. Maybe that's the difference. It's going back to the recency bias for me. I've never consumed so much football in a 12-day, 14-day, whatever we're at now. What are we, like 20 days in? 30. Right? 30 days in?
Yeah.
Never. So everything is a little more red flaggy, and I'm sitting there going, oh, God, that doesn't look good, and this doesn't look good. And it just seems maybe with the increase in matches, too, in match play, there's a lot more opportunity for things to go awry, like you said, Sharms.
It's July the 13th today. This thing started on June the 11th, wasn't it?
Yep. Thursday the 11th.
Anyway, so remember beforehand we spoke about the danger of football fatigue? being a bit too much. Is anyone feeling it? Jimmy, are you feeling it at all?
Fatigue from working at all? Yes. I'm tired. But I enjoy watching the games, and I'm actually missing not having games during the day right now.
It's weird, isn't it? Schedules kind of thrown out for a loop.
Yeah.
It's shite.
What, not having it?
Yeah.
Well, were you going through withdrawal, Gregor?
I'm going through withdrawal symptoms, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It was like yesterday, Sunday. It was such a beautiful day, and I was like, I just wish there was a couple of matches on today.
Yeah. What are we supposed to do? Spend the time with our families?
Oh.
Yeah.
No, we don't want that. Yeah, tell you what.
Through that.
August is going to be rough. Thank God the Prem starts, you know, towards the end in European football. We've got some CPL, some NSL, got MLS kicking back into action as well. There's that. We have got football, I suppose. We should just, you know, embrace. But it's not the World Cup. It's just different, right? It's the World Cup. You wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, who's playing today? You know, you're not like, oh, Kansas City's playing Chicago. No, it just hasn't got quite the same draw as, hey, Spain, France today. That's pretty exciting. So, yeah, there's fatigue from a work standpoint. But I wonder from a fan standpoint, is this fatigue? Is it time this thing finished now? If you're a Norwegian, you're probably agreeing with that. You're saying, okay, enough's enough. I'll say this about the Norwegians, though. We probably haven't given enough time to the dodgy calls. The Haaland, okay, let's touch on that quickly. The Haaland push, it was a push. I don't think that's too dodgy. Was it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was a push. I think he's looking for it.
Yeah.
Sure. And it's a dangerous one as a defender to try to pull that off, because if it goes the other way, like...
It did go the other way.
Yeah.
Haaland looked knackered by the end of it. That's why he's pulled off. They all look knackered. I mean, it was a very weird game, wasn't it? How slow... It was so passive at times. It was like at a snail's pace, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's part of where you're playing. You're playing in Miami. And it's hot. It's humid. Stacks, you've played down there.
It's horrible.
It's tough to breathe. You know, when you could just see the game, it was so slow. Nobody wanted to make a mistake. You're trying to conserve energy because you know it's going to be a long match. And that's why, you know, if that game was played indoor climate controlled, it would have been a hell of a lot faster. Really would have been fast. But because of where it was, the time of day, it was just, it was slow at times.
Only one thing worse than Miami in July, and that's Miami in August.
Yeah.
Especially at 5 p.m., right? Still hot.
Oh.
Still super. Like, why are they doing that? Why are they putting games at that time?
Good question. Why are they playing?
It doesn't even matter. Even if it's later in the evening, it's still hot and humid.
Well, that's a good 10 o'clock kickoff, though, eh, Jimmy? It's a 10 o'clock kickoff in England, so people are at the pub watching that match. That's why they're doing it then.
Probably, yeah. But I mean, it didn't make for a classic by any stretch because it was just so slow. One thing I'll say about Thomas Tuchel, though, he makes mistakes like all managers do, but he corrects them. And that's impressive, Jim. You know, halftime, he made some subs, didn't really work. So then he brings on Jed Spence, who looked fantastic. His best game of the World Cup when he came on. Morgan Rogers with the shot, of course, that led to the winning goal. Tuchel's good that way, right? He finds a way to correct his mistakes. A lot of managers don't do that. They're stubborn. They stick with what their changes.
Yeah, they are. He just seems to read the game very well. And what I do like about him is he's not afraid of change. And it doesn't matter who needs to come off. He's willing to take them off to better the team and deal with situations that come his way. So tactically, he's clued in. And I think you want that as a manager that's brave enough to make changes and take players off that a lot of people would be going, why are we taking him off? Or why is he doing this? So it just goes to show that he's thinking during the match and thinking, how can I outthink the other manager and what little changes can I make that can make a difference here? And he does that.
Now, Norway, we need to give a lot of credit to here. They brought so much to this World Cup, Craig. You know, there are a lot of people's dark horse pick. I understand that. But most people didn't really know what they were outside Erling Haaland. But they brought it. and they're going to be around for a while. And if you look into how have they suddenly improved, because I think prior to this World Cup, it was 98, the last World Cup. They've had this structured restructuring of Norwegian soccer from the grassroots level. Tons of new pitches, artificial pitches in a climate that's pretty rough. And just develop this standard of footballer that wasn't there before. And as a Canadian, you look at what they're doing there and think, huh, there's probably some lessons to be learned.
Yeah, I would say. The encouragement to get involved in sports there is incredible. They have a massive wealth fund that subsidizes sports as well. And the encouragement to get involved in anything, and not so much the winning side of things, just get involved and enjoy sports. And you can see they won the Winter Olympics. Norway won the Winter Olympics. They got the best chess player in the world. They got good tennis players. They got good golfers. They got good everything.
Yeah.
Lots of chess boards have been built, apparently. Yeah. They've put in like 3,000 chess boards around the country to increase. They haven't. I'm just joking. Sorry. Go ahead. Artificial chess boards.
And all the parks.
Yeah, and all the parks. You can't find a park without a chess board.
They are the greatest, sporting country in the world right now. Like, there's hands down, they're the size of Toronto.
Yeah, you're right. And well, the other thing too is they give, I was thinking how difficult it would be to be a white supremacist in watching this tournament, because, and then all of a sudden, like Norway shows up and does really well. At least you have a team, whether or not they believe it in any of your, at any of your
what
stuff.
What are you talking about?
What? Because they're all white.
Where's he going?
There's a bunch of white guys.
Well, good for the white supremacists. You know, I've been thinking about them all tournament, how it must be a labor.
It must be.
If you're a football fan and you're a white supremacist.
It must be so hard if you live in a country where it's a very diverse soccer team, and how to separate, like how to cheer on your country. I find that all of a sudden Norway gives people hope. If you're a white supremacist.
If you're a white supremacist.
I said if.
That's weird angles that Dan Wong's taken this podcast over the years.
I was saying Craig and I were trying. No, I'm not going to pull Craig into it. I was just but we need to talk about our sponsor just before we go keep continuing.
Do you want to put the sponsor in after that?
Well, yeah, to clean it up. It cleans it up.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
What's happening here?
It's the World Cup Watch Canada. It's the World Cup Watch Canada. Brought to you by Tim's. It's game on with Tim's. Hortons.
But I mentioned how Canada can learn some lessons. It's interesting, right? Pitches. I forget the number of pitches that Norway have built over the last number of years, but it's a ton in the hundreds. Artificial pitches. And there's a great article in The Athletic where I'm getting all this information from, by the way. And they're talking about how prior to this current generation of players, Norway was known for very direct physical football. The kind of football you learn on pitches that aren't very good because it doesn't encourage technical ability. And now you have these kids playing on good pitches, and you're finding the Martin Odegaards of the world emerging, guys with technical ability. And with Canada, Jimmy, set to announce before the end of the year their national training center, and we will be talking more about the legacy of this World Cup, and hopefully it means pitches. I'm not sure how many there's going to be, probably not as many as Norway. But how important is that? Just to get not just pitches, but the quality of pitches for kids to play on.
Yeah, it is important to have decent pitches because it does increase the standard of play. That's for sure. You know, sometimes when you go to I go watch my son play. And he's playing on a pitch where the grass is so long that the ball barely even moves, and then they're playing on artificial turf, and all of a sudden the game is a lot faster for their age groups. And, there's more technical abilities, but it's It's a tough situation too, because you look around the world and where some top talent come from, they don't even have proper pitches, but yet they still seem to get through it and find a successful pathway. But I just think, you know, if you can get more pitches, quality pitches around, maybe that helps getting more kids playing the game, because the pitches are a little bit nicer. Maybe that makes them step onto the field now. But it'd be nice to see if we can get more pitches in this country, that's for sure, because I think in certain places we are definitely lacking. You know, when you look at this Norway side, and you're right, the money that they invest into sport in that country is amazing. But does it really produce players? I remember talking to someone when Iceland was in the Euros and they were unbelievable, went to the World mm-hmm. Cup, and everybody goes, oh, what are they doing with development? I had a good friend of mine that I did my coaching course on with, and he has been coaching in Iceland for the last 15 years. And I remember calling him saying, hey, what's going on? Everybody's talking about Iceland and they're finding out and trying to do studies of what you guys are doing different. He goes, Jimmy, we're doing nothing different. He goes, we just have a golden generation. He goes, our next group of players that are coming through are absolute shite. And sure enough, we haven't seen Iceland for a long time.
Such a great point. Where are they?
Right?
It's hard to sustain, though. I mean, with a population like that, right? It's very difficult. But in Norway, they have a league system. They have the top division with 16 clubs. They have a second division with another 16 clubs. They have Elite League, then the first division, and then the second division. They've got another 32 clubs. That's a lot of football clubs for a country of 5.6 million people. So they got a pyramid system.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, you talk about attractiveness, Jimmy. Like when kids step on the pitch, and don't worry, I'm not going to go on a tangent. These kids are, you're in competition. The sport is in competition. So if every time they're going to a great pitch and they feel like, hey, I'm getting something out of this, it keeps them within that sport instead of looking at 9 other sports. Now, we always talk about doing multi-sport and enjoying it, and that being a big thing. And the way we were all brought up was high school sports, or a lot of high school sports. That seems to be moving away into this pay system in Canada. And I think that is where a lot of these countries, especially the Scandinavian countries, they keep it at school and they invest in that kind of school concept of, hey, we're going to get an opportunity to compete. The sport gets to compete and it gets its time to breathe. And you go, oh, that's the sport I like. And every time you're on the pitch, you're like, oh, I love being on the pitch, right? It has to. And in Canada, we have so many different choices. We are so blessed to be in a country that gives us that. But at the same time, it's a little bit of paralysis by all the options.
Yeah. I think as well, you know, we always tend to look at what everybody else is doing around the world and saying, oh, this is what they do over there, so we have to do that. Or this country's doing that, and that's what they're doing with development. I think the biggest thing for me, when I look at our development and where we are as a country with the luxuries that we have, and, you know, kids like sport, but they don't love sport. And I think what we're lacking at the younger age group is how to compete, how to be competitive, what it means to win. Because we don't have scores, we don't have standings, because, you know, kids just go out there and play. But we're not breeding that competitive mentality where it's, we need to win this game and we got to fight for this. It's nothing like that. It's just go play. And then we're asking kids when they're older, okay, now you got to compete. But by then they don't really have that mentality, where I think around the world, when you look at certain countries, you know, that are successful in football, they compete for everything. They're so competitive and they work. And I think that's one thing that we really have to get into our young soccer players, is just being really competitive and aggressive and having that mindset of winning. Because at the end of the day, if you want to be successful in a World Cup or any major tournaments, you have to have that mindset. You look at the Final Four right now, it's all about winning. They're competitive. And I think we need to maybe have a look at that, because I think that mentality would suit us better with with development as well.
And the importance to invest in the underage tournaments. Mm-hmm. So important to be involved in the U17 setup and the World Cups to get experience playing in tournament football and learning how to deal with that, how to win in those conditions, under 20s. I mean, Messi won the U20s in, 2005, I think it was. He was actually eligible for 2007 in Canada U20s, but they wouldn't let him play. He's won the Olympic Games. He's tournament ready, you know, as well as being obviously, you know, generational player or the greatest of all time. But they put a lot of emphasis in those U tournaments. Teams like Argentina, they look at they're just stacked year after year, and they take it seriously. It wasn't until recent years that England took those underage tournaments seriously, really.
Well, who's the defending U20 champ? So I think Morocco. Believe, which speaks for itself, right? Wow. Really good youth program there.
Yeah.
And if you look at Canada, so it's 07 that we hosted the U20s, right? The World Cup?
Yeah.
It's 07.
Argentina won it with Aguero. Yeah. Aguero scored the winner, 1-0.
I don't think Canada's qualified since, or maybe once they've qualified since.
Yeah.
Something like that, right? So that's why this upcoming CONCACAF Champions championship is so massive for this U20 setup, which Jesse Marsh is involved in, of course. Jimmy, back to the whole not keeping score. I know we've discussed it before. Remind me again the age group. When do they? At what age do they start keeping scores and stats?
I think it's 14.
Is it 14?
14 or 13, 14, then they start keeping scores and standings. I mean, with the younger age groups now, like they just, my son goes out there and they play and they leave. It doesn't matter, right? They just go out there and have fun.
Isn't that important, though, too, to encourage that freedom for players to, rather than, the problem is not so much the players as the coaches, right? The young age groups, they take it too seriously. And with the little diminutive kid up front who's got all the skills but hasn't got the physical attributes, he'll be benched in favor of the big lumbering guy that can score a hat-trick every game at the age of 10. Wasn't that the main reason for switching it?
Yeah, I think that was part of the reason was the coaches. But then does that affect the players, their competitiveness, the willingness to win? Does that come into play? I think it does come into play.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that they didn't keep score until like 12, 13.
It's a relatively new thing, right? The last number of years.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Like how new? Sorry, I've never even heard of that. I thought there was always a point to a
game. Yeah, no, it's
been game.
Over the last number of years, but you know, some people like it, some people don't.
So Jimmy, just so you know, the way I am competitive, I would not have played soccer if I wasn't keeping score. That was the only reason I played soccer.
The kids do though, right, don't they? Yeah. The kids do keep score though, that's the thing. It may not be on a website, you can look up your team's record perhaps, but the kids do keep score, do they not? There must be some innate competitiveness on that pitch.
Yeah, to a certain extent, yeah. They'll come off and go, oh, yeah, we won 3-0, but what are you playing for, you know? Mm-hmm. You're not playing for, you know, to win a trophy. Like, you got to remember when we were all young and you're playing, you know, you'd be in the newspaper who said, you know, Dan Wong got 3 goals.
That's exactly it. You want to get in the newspaper.
And then you had your standings that were all set. And
you
know, okay, we're going to win the league and we're going to win our trophy. And it was competitive, right? Really competitive. But some people look at it and they say, we're doing this because of the coaches or we're doing this because of the parents, but... You know, mm-hmm. does that kind of affect the players and their mindset and of winning and having that, you know, that competitiveness where you need that mindset where, you know, you got to fight for this and we got to win this.
Yeah, I think there's to a point that that's the case. I mean, but 90% of people that get involved in the sport are doing it for other reasons than their kids are going to play for Canada. You know, they're playing for the joy of it, the community of it. Football and team sports make they do produce good human beings, just well balanced because you're used to working as a team. So there's a lot of quality that comes out of football outside of we're talking about is making it to the national team and producing results at the World Cup. That's a different thing altogether.
You're right. It's not really what sports is for, is it? To play for your country with 99.9% of kids not making it to that level. I'm so torn with this whole conversation. I see both sides. Great, I really do.
Yeah, it's a great conversation, isn't it? Like, what's the right way and what's the wrong way? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's a great debate.
Yeah, it is. We have to get to the other match, Argentina-Switzerland. Argentina almost did it again. Man, they're not making things easy for themselves, are they? Up 1-0, then they sit. They just sit. Switzerland score. But then, of course, the other massive controversy of the weekend. Or is it the Brillembrollo red card, mistaken identity? Goes to the screen. The Argentine who was done for the yellow card, that's rescinded. Nope, you dove, simulation, second yellow, you're off. Now, Murat Yakin, the Swiss coach, says post-match, I don't understand it. The fact that they intervened unnecessarily is extremely hurtful. It's a rule that has nothing to do with football. It destroyed our game today. We have to accept it, but it's painful to lose that way. Now, Ben Jacobs are next. We'll get Ben on the show at some point. I met him, actually, in Vancouver. He's a great follow. I'm going to read his tweet to kind of break down the whole reality of the situation and the rule itself. So Ben Jacobs on X says, the problem with the new mistaken identity rule is that it sets a dangerous precedent. Brillembrollo dived. So if called on the field, it's a second yellow. But that wasn't the decision. Mm-hmm. Yet an amendment to IFAB wording before the tournament states, when the referee shows a yellow or red card but has clearly penalized the wrong player of either team for the offense in question, the offense itself cannot be reviewed except in the context of mistaken identity. We saw the same with Tim Ream, originally booked on a foul, and Miguel Almiron eventually booked for diving in the States against Paraguay. In both instances, the right decision was reached when revisiting the incidents. Yet it's massively open for debate as to whether this is actually mistaken identity. And that's the issue. It's just a mistake by the referees. Both got solved by a dive. They didn't mix up players. They just made a bad call on a regular foul and wrongly handed out a yellow card. So really, it's just a rule allowing VAR to intervene on more minor on-field calls. And that's the part a lot of people will feel uneasy about. So it's not the fact that he dived. He did dive, and it should be a yellow card. But the ref missed it, right, Craig? That's the bottom line. That's why I think the Swiss are so aggrieved.
Yeah, the mistaken identity thing, that's interpretation. Because I remember when the situation happened with Tim Ream and Almiron, that I remember seeing that going, hold on a minute. They put up on the TV mistaken identity. And it was like, well, not really, because the referee was interpreted as the other way around and gave the yellow card. But in the end, they got there. So the right decision was made, but I think they're going to have to interpret it or change the wording of it and how VAR gets involved in that, because it is re-refereeing and that's what they didn't want. So there's more questions about VAR and what they should be getting involved with all the time. And it seems to be more and more under a microscope and having to be.
But Craig, you're the head referee. You're the superintendent of referees for this tournament. And you're talking to Gianni Infantino.
Congratulations, Craig.
Craig, congratulations. But you're having these conversations about what is the line. Would they, and this is me being completely ignorant about how tournaments are run, and maybe you, the insight might not, maybe it'll, I don't know if you have any insight on it, but it's more about, would they stop and go, hey guys, this is too much? Are we going too far? Because we are re-refereeing. Is that something that tournament officials do, executive? Do they look at the game and go, oh man, this was just too much interference and re-refereeing throughout this tournament, especially during the knockout rounds? I'm going to throw that especially yeah, because it was specifically where it's made such a huge difference.
No, I mean, I think, but come the next World Cup, I think we'll, or even the next year or so, we'll see big changes as far as VAR goes. I think they've opened up a Pandora's box here, and it's just getting worse and being more, you know, under the microscope all the time than we would like it to be. However, like, I do like the fact that they got those decisions right, because if you're on the wrong end of that, and you get sent off because of a player diving, like, it, that has to be changed somehow. It has to be into play. And I think they got it right in the end. It's just the wording of it and the mistaken identity, which really doesn't fall under what the rules were supposed to be for.
it's that process, isn't it? Essentially, how they get to that decision. Because in the end, Brill and Bolo died.
And it was, you know, transparency as well. All these different things. I know CONCACAF has different rules, and even FIFA do. With part of the process for suspensions and things like that, it has to be more transparent. And instead of all this hearsay of what's going on and what the decisions were, and you know, it's wrong most of it.
Jimmy, though, it was a world-class dive. I mean, that was like proper awfulness as far as diving. We're going to be seeing that for a long time. All the haters out there, there you go. There's your moment from the World Cup. Why soccer sucks.
There is some good dives. Some guys are really good at it. Really, really good.
Was that a good or bad one, though? That's a question.
I don't know.
Obviously bad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was so... I mean, it was awful, but it was the attempt. I give him credit. He really put everything behind it.
Well, you called it world class on the dark web, Sharms. What was world class about it? Give me like a grading. No, I if you're doing gymnastics.
I thought I liked the Rivaldo holding his head when he got the ball hit him in the chest moment, which became a famous meme or infamous meme for years. That quality, because he didn't get touched. He got touched after the dive. He had thrown himself into the air. It was gross.
Was it Michael Richards? He remember that one that he had that dive? It was so bad.
I think I do. I think I may have seen it since it happened, though, because they've referred to it on one of his shows.
Yeah, they were hammering it. They were like, that was terrible. You were like a bricky. You went down in layers.
So I don't have sympathy. Do you for Brill and Brolo Bolo? We can discuss the nuances and the context of the language used in him being sent off. But he's on a yellow card and he does that. What are you thinking?
Exhausted is what he's thinking. He's you've given up on if he's a great player and he can do so many different things, but I think he was exhausted. And you get when you get exhausted, you try and do things like that, I would assume. I just know that
maybe
when you get your brain is the first thing you go, and you think you're being sneaky, but you're exhausted, your brain shuts down, and then all of a sudden you do a Rodney Dangerfield and back to school, the triple Lindy, and do a little bit of this, jump off the diving board.
I think I will say that, you know, they're using video replay for so many things, but why don't they, after the fact, for these blatant dives, suspend these players?
Yeah,
I agree. Like, you get a one-game suspension or whatever. Do something about it because it will clean it up.
Yeah.
But then whoever's playing against Argentina will be, like, terrified between games because they know that FIFA's looking really closely at every challenge.
Perfect. Don't dive then.
Don't dive. That was like watching Paraguay. I couldn't. Painful.
Yeah, like, that's an embarrassment. Like, it's everything that people painful. Don't, the general fan doesn't like about the sport, right? And I get it. I get it. I understand it. But
can we all agree that Paraguay were the villains of this World Cup? There's been so many heroes of this World Cup, so many great stories, great teams. Paraguay did their very best to shat all over this World Cup, didn't they?
They were the one underdog that nobody liked.
Yeah.
They were.
They're like horrible. Seagulls. Everybody hates seagulls, don't they?
Steven Seagal?
Yeah. He was the worst host on Saturday Night Live.
Those seagulls, him and his family, the worst. Seagulls do suck, though. They just ruin a picnic, don't they?
Oh, they just ruin everything. Did you ever see one where the guy gave him laxatives? I think it was like in California on the beach. He bought like all these burgers. And they put laxatives in it, and the seagulls ate it all. And then about half an hour later, just shit over everybody.
Was it trying to punish the seagulls or trying to punish the people?
I think it was a little bit of both.
He just sat back in his car and watched.
Just watching people like rollerblading, just shit everywhere.
Well, he owned the car wash around the corner, so they did it in the parking lot.
Oh, smart. Did he really?
No.
Oh, that'd be really clever, though. Brilliant.
That is a good idea.
Yeah. You don't want to feed Steven Seagal laxatives at all. You don't want to do that. That'd be even messier.
We've got 5 minutes left, Sharm. Should we continue talking about Argentina being inevitable just on a against Switzerland? And to be honest, Switzerland playing really well for that match.
Was anyone upset that Argentina moved forward, though? Craig, were you in the end? Switzerland, nice story, you know. They don't bring much pizzazz to the party, do they?
No.
But was there part of you that's thinking, man, come on, find a way, Argentina. I wouldn't mind seeing Messi for one more match.
Yeah.
Or two.
Well, of course. I mean, but no, I would have no issues with that. I don't think FIFA care either. I really don't. The money's in the bank. You know what I mean? Like, it's
true.
Why would they care? Look at all the teams that didn't make it. Yeah. Italy, for one, like, they didn't care. They don't care.
Yeah.
No.
It doesn't matter. The game is so massive that it doesn't matter.
I think secretly they'd probably want somebody else to win a World Cup to show everybody else you got a chance.
Yeah, maybe.
Because normally it's the same usual suspects, isn't it?
Yeah, I disagree with you. FIFA cares because the broadcasters care. All of a sudden, Fox gets to put up their... we worked in television. All of a sudden, you get to put your... it's like a Super Bowl ad, right? I mean, imagine that halftime show that's going to come out. How many advertisements, how long that's going to be, right? I don't know. I don't know. Who is it? BBC is not going to show the halftime show, right? Or something like that? No, really? I don't. Someone said we're not going to show it. I know that my buddy was watching Telemundo in Texas, where he lives, and he said they were not showing commercials during the hydration break. So BBC
weren't. I know.
Yeah. So some took advantage of it as a opportunity to monetize their advertising time, and some broadcasters didn't. But this is the perfect four almost, right? Just in soccer nations. Other than maybe a Brazil in there, it's basically the perfect four of standing within the world and who you're going to get tuning in. Yeah. You know, there's
this point in football, it's definitely the four they want.
Yeah.
Regardless who's in the final, you're still getting billions and billions and billions of people around the world tuning in to watch a World Cup final.
But that's the point, Jimmy. You're getting a few more billions, another billion, and all of a sudden Fox gets to say, hey, we're charging an extra $50,000 a commercial for a 30. So instead
saying that's based on who's in the final.
Yes, absolutely.
Are those deals sold though already? Are they sold already?
No, they would put up rates because some would say, hey, I want it's dynamic, just so everybody knows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at this point you got Messi or you got England, essentially, right? And
two winners
are gonna be massive draws. I wonder who's the biggest draw globally. That's a tough one. World champions, Messi. England has a huge fan base around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, that'd France, be a tough one.
France and Spain is probably France because I think the Mbappe factor is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yamal's not quite there yet.
Yeah, but he's huge for the youth and the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yamal. Is he Yamal?
Massive. Oh, massive.
Is he? Yeah.
Boots out.
And McDonald's.
Okay. Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they love him. Yeah. Yeah, Messi's a draw on himself, isn't he? Like,
mm-hmm. One last time too, right? One last time to really cash in on Messi.
He's never played England. That is fascinating because he's played everybody else.
Has he not? Really? No, I guess not, eh?
No.
This reminds me a little bit of, my memory isn't great, but I remember 86, the first World Cup I really remember watching and being how terrified I was of watching Diego Maradona because I watched him all tournament, how he just dominated the entire tournament. And I was genuinely terrified, like watching a monster under your bed. Watching England against Maradona, kind of feel the same way right now with Messi in England. He's not the same Messi as he was. He's not Maradona in 86, but he's still, even though he wasn't great against Switzerland, he's still really good. It terrifies me, but man, what theater, man. They're two great semifinals.
Fantastic. I think England's going to beat Argentina. I think it's their time.
I like it.
And this is going to come back to Diego Simeone for what he did.
Kicking out.
Yeah.
Bex.
Ten
brave lions, one little boy or something. Wasn't that the headline the next day? I think it was. It was brutal that day. Anyway, listen, we're out of time. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Legendary.
Make sure you like and subscribe. Tomorrow we will break down France against Spain ahead of kickoff. So lots to get to. Like and subscribe and follow and check out our Patreon, and we'll see you tomorrow. Cheers very much for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, gracias, Tremont.
Good job. You got through it.
Monday morning. I actually had a great day yesterday. I worked out in the yard.